and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everybody is having an absolutely terrific day today. A lot of news going on as always. And how are you doing today, Dad?
Austin, I'm doing absolutely wonderful, for this is the day the Lord hath made. I tell you what, weather here, mid-50s, mid-70s during the day. Yeah, it doesn't get any better than this. It's just amazing how wonderful the weather is down here. Of course, I need to stop saying that because of the growth we're having here in Central Florida.
Yeah.
Don't come here. There's too many people. I want to talk today. I mentioned this yesterday. I'm going to start with this, and then I'm going to let you take over with the news stories. Yesterday, I talked about Edward Bernays, the cousin, basically, of Sigmund Freud. And I wanted to talk to you today about who he is. I'm going to give you some of his quotes real quick, and I'm going to go right to his Wikipedia page that you can follow me at. It says, if we understand, here's a quote, if we understand the mechanism and motives of the group mind, it is now possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without them knowing it. This is all Kabbalah teaching. This is all right out of the, he was a Sabbatean, by the way. He followed Sabbatean and Zevi. He was Luciferian. And he's the one now who's taught these globalists how to do this. So it's amazing. Another quote, it is now possible to control and regiment the masses according to our will without their knowing it in almost every act of their daily lives, whether in the sphere of politics or business, in our social context or in our ethical thinking. We are dominated by a relatively small number of persons who understand the mental processes and social patterns of the masses. It is they who pull the wires which control the public mind. I mean, this guy was, he was right out with it. Another quote, the conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. I mean, there you go. The only difference between propaganda and education really is the point of view. The advocacy of what we believe is in education. The advocacy of what we don't believe is in propaganda. See, he's telling you right there, if you give people enough propaganda and you educate them properly, they'll believe anything. It is not necessary for the politician to be the slave of the public's group's prejudices. Listen to that. If the politician can learn how to mold the minds of the voters in conformity with his own ideas of public welfare and public service, the important thing for the statesman of our age is not as much to know how to please the public, but how to sway the public. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. I mean, this is the guy who basically Goebbels, Hitler's propaganda minister, thought was the man. I mean, Goebbels was a mentor of these guys. And so he basically is saying that if you have the right tools at your hands, you can literally manipulate everybody as far as the ability of these people to be, how should I say, you basically have the ability to control the minds of the masses. Now, what's interesting about all of this is that, you know, Austin, they go out here in the open and they basically say all of this stuff and they talk about all of this stuff as if we don't hear them talking. I mean, years ago, we had a subcontractor who was a carpenter, and the guy was just, he was a disaster. And it was during the building boom about 10, 12 years ago, and we had to do some carpentry work at the house, and we were forced to use him because I didn't have time to do it myself. And I remember, you know, I'd be talking about him, you know, one day he says, hey, well, I'm here listening to what you guys are saying. And I'm like, well, we're not talking about you behind your back. We're just trying to figure out how to make this work with you because your behavioral patterns are so bizarre. Now, let me give you some background. This guy was born in 1891. He was born in Germany. He was an Austrian-American pioneer in the, probably was born in Austria, Austrian-American pioneer in the field of public relations and propaganda. He referred to in his obituary as the father of public relations. Bernays was named as one of the 100 most influential Americans in the 20th century. His best-known campaigns include a 1929 effort to promote female smoking, listen to this, by branding cigarettes as feminist torches of freedom. You know, give you lung cancer, but it's gonna be your torch of freedom. And his work for the United Fruit Company connected with the CIA orchestrated overthrow of the democratically elected Guatemalan government in 1954. He worked for dozens of major American corporations, including Procter & Gamble, General Electric, for government agencies, politicians, and for nonprofit organizations. Of his many books, Crystallizing Public Opinion in 1923 and Propaganda in 1928 gained special attention in his early efforts to define and theorize the form of public relations. He was born to a Jewish family. the son of Eli Bernays and Anna Freud Bernays. His great-grandfather was Isaac Bernays, chief rabbi of Hamburg. Bernays was a double nephew of Viennese psychoanalyst Sigmund Freud by virtue of his mother, Freud's sister. I mean, Sigmund Freud's sister was his mother, and his father's sister, Martha Bernays Freud, who married Sigmund. These guys are intertwined. The family moved from Vienna to the United States in the 1890s, and Bernays became a grain exporter at the Manhattan Produce Exchange. Now, you can go ahead and read through the whole thing, what he's done and how he did it. But, guys, I wanted you to know who he was and basically what he did. After the U.S. entered World War I, the Committee on Public Information hired Bernays to work for its Bureau of Latin American Affairs, based in an office in New York. Bernays, with his lieutenant Ackerman, focused on building support for the war domestically and abroad, focusing on business operating in Latin America. But he was also the one who taught the government how to vilify and basically make as animals the Germans of World War I. Remember this. He was the one who pushed together all of what he was doing as far as was against Germany. He got us into World War I. He used his uncle Sigmund Freud idea to help convince the public, among other things, that bacon and eggs was the true all-American breakfast. And remember, these guys are Jews. They didn't eat bacon. They were trying to kill us with the bacon. I mean, it's unbelievable. If you read through his who's who's of who he worked with and what he did, his nonprofit clients, I mean, he worked for the nonprofit clients. Here's some of them. Here we go. He worked first for the NAACP convention in Atlanta, Georgia. Of course he did. And he made important contributions of African Americans to whites living in the South. He later received an award for the NAACP contribution. He also worked on behalf of many nonprofit organizations, such as the Committee on Publicly Methods of Social Work, the Jewish Mental Health Society, the Book Publishers Research Institute, the New Infirmity for Women and Children, the Committee for Consumer Legislation, and it goes on and on and on. In 1920, Bernays organized the publication of Freud's introductory lectures on psychoanalysis. Remember, Freud was also a Sabbatean Kabbalist. In 1927, he worked briefly for the cigarette manufacturers, basically competing against Lucky Brand cigarettes. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Called the cigarettes Torches of Freedoms. And you can go through this and read it and read it and read it and read it. This guy was the man who has shaped your opinion. He's the one who basically taught the manufacturers of General Motors how to make us have a personalized relationship with automobiles. And this is why, Austin, a few years ago, when you bought that four side-by-side, and they sent you that brochure to fill you for a dollar, yep, asking you, how did it make you feel to own a 4x4? Do you feel important when you buy a 4x4? Does it make you have a higher self-esteem when you buy a 4x4? What do your friends think about you when you pull up in a new side-by-side 4x4? All these crazy questions. They're messing, yep, with your head. Never fill out those forms, because then they know exactly how to target you with advertising from them. They sell that information. They, oh, by the way, Austin Brower likes 4x4s for this reason. They list it. And so the next letter you get lists all those reasons as far as why you need to buy a new Chevy truck or a new Ford truck or a new Dodge truck or whatever. They make you want to believe that if you don't have a brand new vehicle, you haven't succeeded. They make you want to believe that if you don't have a big super house to live in a big house with the fanciest furniture, you haven't succeeded. If you aren't politically correct, you're a racist and a bigot, and you haven't succeeded. It's all being programmed in you by this little dead punk, may he not rest in peace, who did all of this and taught the masses how to do this. And quite frankly, being a Kabbalist and a Sabbatean, he was probably given about a bunch of esoteric knowledge by who knows what or where to teach the people how to control groupthink. He wants to turn us all into a hive mind. And guys, they're doing a pretty doggone good job of it. Austin, what do you think?
No, no doubt about it. I mean, that's exactly what they have done for years now, and I mean decades. They've continually, and that's why I've told you guys so much, it's so important that you don't allow a lot of these apps to monitor you all the time, because now what they do, when you give these apps full permission to your phone, they listen to your voice, they listen to you, they read your text messages, they look at your photos, they monitor all this stuff, and you can look at it, right? We need access to your media, we need access to your voice, we need access to your location, we need access to your text, we need access to your data. they gather all of it off your phone, and most people's phones are some of the most private tools they have, with different phone numbers, different text message, all kinds of this calendar schedule. They want access to all that so they can build a giant platform on you and monitor you. And as Dad said, use that for third-party advertising and marketing. But again, it goes even a step further because they want to build that full psychological profile on you. There's a reason why they have the massive data center in Utah. I say that all the time, and a lot of people are like, oh, what data center in Utah? They have a monstrosity. NSA built a multi-hundred-billion-dollar data center in Utah that they collect and store and correlate all the data they get from every single venue. Means anything from phone calls to text messages to social media to internet chatter. Everything in the entire world goes into this data center and is correlated with the huge AI systems they have. They do that to build a data on every single person. So in another 5, 10, 15, 20 years, whenever they decide they want to roll this whole internet of things fully out and bring out the entire artificial intelligence system, they're going to know what you're going to do before you even do it, and they're going to be able to predict where you're going to go and what you're going to do before you even think about doing it. That's the whole aspect of what they're trying to do here, so then they can tie it into the further security state that they will have developed at that point. Look at what we already have going in China. Social credit score, people snitching on one another, debtors system that gives people's location that's in debt. You know, I talked to you guys about that a couple months ago. They have everybody's phone now. You can pull it up, and it'll pinpoint the GPS location of people where they're at that owe money, that owe creditors, that have debt, that haven't paid their bills. For whatever reason, I don't know why that's pertinent to the civilian population to know, but China obviously does. I guess so they can shame people into doing what they need to do, so they can drop their credit score super low. I don't know. But that is where they're starting to take this stuff further and further down the rabbit hole. Also, too, in other news, this is something that I found to be kind of interesting because obviously, I don't care for the New York Times. I know they're very liberal on a lot of stuff, but I've read multiple releases now about this whole incident that happened in Sri Lanka, these church attacks against these Christians celebrating Resurrection Day on Sunday, that there was full knowledge of the attack before it was going to happen. They knew the group that was about to do it. They knew the group had the munitions and the explosives to do it, and they did nothing. This just shows you, now whether or not this is a psyop from the New York Times, I don't know, but this has been what I've heard from a lot of people, is this was a well-coordinated attack. They had a lot of help in the radical Islamic community, and that they knew that they were going to do it before they even did it. This article from the New York Times says, a confidential security memo laid it all out weeks in advance. Names, addresses, phone numbers, even times in the middle of the night that one suspect was going to visit his wife. And to the days leading up to the Resurrection Sunday's devastating suicide bombings that killed 320 people in Sri Lanka, the country's full security agency had been closely watching a cell of National Fahim Jamaat, a radical Islamic organization that security officials in Sri Lanka knew, and they said were going to carry out attacks and may have received help from abroad. They knew the group was dangerous. They had collected intelligence on the whereabouts of the leader in an April security memo, which warned of Catholic church bombings on Easter. They had been warned even earlier by India that the group, also known by the spelling National Fahid Jamaat, was plotting church attacks. They knew as far back as January that the radical Islamics tied to groups had stockpiled weapons and detonators in the country, and within hours of when three churches and three hotels were bombed, security services had already swooped on at least 24 suspects, and by Tuesday had arrested over 40 people that were involved in the bombing. Why the security agencies failed to act on the information before the bombing is now an enormous question. It has been further complicated by the feud between the president and prime minister, which left the prime minister, Ronald Wilkinson, ignorant of the information the security agencies possessed. They also said said that one of the suicide bombers was even arrested just a few months ago on vandalism charges, and essentially they don't know why nothing was done about this. Now, whether or not this is being used as an excuse to increase the security state and the police state, I don't know. But again, this has been repeated throughout history when we have referred to it or things are called false flag attacks. Now, a lot of people hear that term, false flag attack, and they're like, oh, it's a false flag. A lot of people think, oh, that means it's a fake attack. No, I'm not saying it's a fake attack. It's a very legitimate attack they just had over there. But a false flag attack has gone back to pretty much the history of time. It's a covert operation designed to deceive. The deception creates the appearance of a group, party, or nation being responsible for some activity. The term false flag originated referring to pirate ships that flew flags of countries as a disguise to prevent their victims from fleeing or preparing the battle. Sometimes the flags would remain and the blame for the attack be laid incorrectly on another country. The term today extends beyond naval encounters to include countries that organize attacks on themselves and make attacks appear enemy nations or other terrorists, thus giving the nation that were supposedly attacked a pretext for domestic repression or foreign military aggression. Now, whether or not I'm pretty much confident that there was the Islamic terrorist aspect to this. There's no doubt about it, because we know how egregious and aggressive these groups have become, and we know that the essentially muzzling of Christian free speech and the essential unaltered, unfettered Muslim rhetoric is now country worldwide. I mean, pretty much the Muslims can do whatever they want, they can say whatever they want, and it doesn't matter, and the Christians pretty much can't even say anything. Perfect example we see when this attack first happened. Majority of the mainstream media outlets would not even say Muslim or Islamic attack. Hardly any of them did. There's only a couple of them that now have reported it, including the New York Times. But when the New Zealand mosque attack happened, the first page on every single news outlet was white supremacist attack, a terrorist attack, rocks New Zealand Muslim mosque, and stuff like that. I mean, we saw that repeatedly all over the news. So we see how it doesn't matter what happens, they're going to push their narrative. But now we're already seeing reports that they knew about this before it happened. They knew exactly who was involved in it. They knew they had munitions and explosives beforehand, and they knew that there were going to be churches attacked on Easter Sunday, and essentially they let it go through, showing you that there's obviously something going on behind the scenes, even if the motive is not what we believe it to be or something different. I don't know. But again, know that there is more going on behind the scenes than what we are being told, Dan.
There always is. And again, this is why I wanted to do the Edward Bernays thing today. It's the shaping of the groups. Here, let me give you a perfect example. You know, you're allowed to hammer Christianity. Can't talk about Muslims. If Christians get killed during a Resurrection Sunday, they're basically there to worship Easter. Okay.
Easter worship.
You don't talk about Christians, right? Okay. Here's two things from Drudge this morning. The gay Jewish guy doing the news there. He goes, tens of thousands attend a Jewish Passover blessing at the Western Wall. That's the headline. Next headline over says, pastor kisses young woman on lips to rid her body of demons. Okay. So which faith are they promoting here? The blessings or some pastor kissing some young girl on the lips? You're like, you really think they would do that? Yeah! This is what they do! This is how they do it! Here's another one. On Drudge again this morning. CBS has a white problem. That'd be us, by the way. You guys, white people. Executive blast toxic culture at network in an explosive letter. Last year, CBS hired two white shoe law firms. White shoe law firms. To conduct an independent investigation into alleged misconduct by then CEO Leslie Moon Ives, as well as the broader cultural issues of CBS. Writing for Variety, Whitney Davis, a veteran of the company's news and entertainment divisions, describes how the investigation prompted her to consider her nearly decade and a half career at CBS. Quote, CBS has a white problem. Austin, if we said CBS has a black problem, whoa, all hell would break loose. Hey, CBS has Hispanic problem. Whoa, no, can't say that. Hey, CBS has a Chinese problem or an Asian problem. No. It's kind of like I always get a kick out of this, and I was thinking about this morning. If a 6-foot-2 white guy who basically has blonde hair and blue eyes, robs a convenience store. And all of a sudden, you know, you hear on the news, 6'2" white guy robs a convenience store, blonde hair, blue eyes, 220 pounds, be on the lookout, wearing, you know, white shirt and driving a tan colored car. Okay, I'm okay with that. But you can't say that. You can't say a 6'2" white guy or 6'2" black guy or 6'2" Hispanic guy or 6'2" Oriental guy. You can't say any of that anymore. You've got to kind of say, oh, local liquor store robbed. News at 8. You're like, okay, who do we look for? It's like 6 hours from now. What do we do? This is the problem that we have with political correctness. We've no longer can say things that are okay. We have to say things that are politically correct. I mean, think about that for a second. We can no longer say things that are okay. We have to say things that are politically correct. Breitbart did an interesting article today, and it was basically actress Patricia Heaton. She rips the MSNBC for the loathsome Easter Sunday ambush on Robert Mueller. They apparently caught him coming out of a church and just hammered him, and she basically ripped them. And then she talks about how, in the same article, you got to do, and I've got this posted on the website, they have a whole thing of Pelosi. And she's talking about the word. You have to love the word. And she's talking about Jesus is what she's talking about. But remember, these guys won't mention the name of Jesus. They won't do it. Have you ever noticed how when Hollywood, with these Sabbatean Kabbalists, Luciferians run Hollywood, they show Christian lights, Christians in bad lights. And they never talk about Jesus. Now, in the older days, and sometimes even right now, in some of the movies that have black stars in them, they'll talk about Jesus. But they don't talk about it in general. And here's Pelosi, and go to my website and watch this, and read this, watch this video. Pelosi works, stumbles all over the place and talks about the word this and the word that and the word this and won't mention the name of Jesus. Why? Because these people hate Christ. They absolutely loathe Christ, and they're doing everything they possibly can through the Frankfurt School, through Edward Bernays, and through all of the other things to change it. This morning, I sent a text message to one of our listeners. His name is Gene. And he's been listening to the show now for 4 or 5 months. And everybody's finally, the people, you guys listen to it, you guys are all starting to get what I'm saying, is that everything is manipulated. It's all a lie. And once you see that, then you start questioning the narrative. You start questioning all of it. Because once you question it, now you're on the right road. Because when you question something, you start to ask questions. You start to try to reason your way through it as far as from an intellectual and a Christian standpoint and a philosophical standpoint is, why are they doing this? Why are they saying this? What is their end objectives? I had another guy who was talking to me yesterday. His name's Randy out of Texas. And he was saying, well, you know, we know that when you're talking about, you know, the different things with the temple and all that stuff and what's going on in the Middle East and the Greater Israel program, you just need to be more open and more vocal about all that, which I'm pretty open and vocal about it. And I explained to Randy, I said, here's the deal. I said, the problem that we run into is this. We've got the international banking cartel being run by the Rothschilds that are primarily Sabbatean Kabbalists. Got that. Some of them, I'm sure, are Luciferians. Some of them are not. But then we have people like Bill Clinton and Bush's and all these other people who go to Bohemian Grove, and these people are basically just weirdos and wicked people. Some of them are Jewish, some of them are not Jewish, some of them claim to be Christians, which they're obviously not, and some of them are just agnostics and atheists. And so the problem you run into, and it's very clear about this in the book of Revelation, it says that the synagogue of Satan are the people that are Jews, that they're claiming to be Jews, that are not Jews. They're basically Luciferians. It's the same group of people who, in the book of John, crucified Christ. It's the synagogue of Satan. This is the group that runs around doing their Moloch and their Bohemian Grove weird stuff and their Asherah stuff and all of the weird, you know, Baal worship and this child sacrifice and these crazy parties they go to, these Babylonian parties. This is that group. And so you can't just say that it's the Jews or the Arabs or the Muslims or the Christians, or the people who claim to be any of these religions, but it's that group that has woven itself so finely through the organizations, a lot of them using the Masonic lodges at the higher levels to get these messages and these secret society messages across. I mean, who taught Edward Bernays how to do all of this stuff? Who taught him how to completely control the group think and the group mind? This is all Kabbalah stuff, guys. It's all coming from Sabbatean Kabbalah. It's Kabbalah. That's who's doing all of this stuff. But they're not one particular group. I mean, they may claim to be something, but they're not. The sad part about it is that you know, it's like that article I wrote you, I read you guys a few months back from Prager, and he's talking about how the left-wing Jews, the guys that are the communists, the hardcore Jews, who are, a lot of them are atheists, a lot of them are, you know, are satanic people, how this group is giving everybody in Judaism a bad name because of what they do. It's kind of like saying that the Jehovah Witness or the Seventh-day Adventists or other groups or sects in Christianity are the basically the mainstay of Christianity. Well, you know, I know some Seventh-day Adventists that I really believe that they're saved. Now, they don't eat meat, and I'm okay with that. But there are a lot of other fringe groups that are out there, different cults, you know, like Jim Jones and all the rest of those guys who claim to be Christians. You can't take a group of people that have dragged the entire center to one side and have skewed the relationship of the people who practice certain faiths to that weird stuff that they do. You can't do that. So it's hard. It's really hard. Like I told Randy, it's very difficult to do this and try to get this message across and not sound like you don't like one particular group. But you got to ask yourself a question. And Lisa Haven did a really good job on this, and I posted it on the website yesterday. She's talking about Muslims. You can hammer Muslims. You can hammer Christians. You can hammer Trump. You can hammer anybody in Congress. You can hammer anybody. But who can't you hammer? Who can't you hammer? Who can't you talk about? And she's so funny. She doesn't even say it. She didn't even say it. The truth of the matter is, from the American Israeli Political Action Committee (APAC) and all in the Defamation League, all these groups work together to promote Jewish causes and promote the Greater Israel program and the rebuilding of the Third Temple. But you can't talk about that. But we talk about it. Why? Because this group of people are just absolutely H-E double sticks bent on bringing in the Antichrist. They would call their Messiah. This is what they're planning on doing. And guys, we have to understand who we are fighting against and what this battle is about. So don't get caught up in all this little stuff, because there's going to be skirmishes all over the place. There are going to be all kinds of things happening, and they're going to be hitting you with all kinds of stuff, like the Christian pastor kisses these girls on the mouth to get rid of demons, and how tens of thousands of people are blessed at the Wailing Wall, and all of these different things with the outbreaks of the measles in New York City. New York outbreak gives U.S. measles count up to 626. Whoopee! That's nothing! 626 people with the measles that'll get permanent, you know, immunity from the measles now. This is what they do. They completely control the narrative. Is what they've done for centuries, and they're not going to stop it, guys. What do you think, Oz?
Oh, no doubt, no doubt about it. This is continually, it will continue to go on and on and on. Also, too, in other news, they're staying now as far as the millennials are being crushed under so much debt. I found this to be an interesting article because I've been watching, you know, I stay a lot of stuff with the markets and the housing and everything. I watch a lot of that and just kind of keep an eye on it. And it's crazy here, and they said non-housing debt now reaches over $4 trillion in the United States. And they're saying the millennial generation is having a hard time in the world with the significant amount of debt, primarily because of student loans. Again, we talked about before. They said non-housing debt was just over $2 trillion as of 2009. Today, it's over $4 trillion, a 60% increase in 10 years. They said, of course, that's no surprise, because the student debt is over $1.46 trillion now. They said the biggest problem with the amount of non-housing debt floating in the economy is the majority of it is non-wealth building debt, meaning it's credit cards, it's auto loans, it's student loans, it's personal loans. It's not investment capital. There's no debt to grow your company. It's simply just consumer debt or student debt. And this is the problem, is it is growing rapidly, and if you look at the graph trend on it from 2004 to current, it's insane how right around 2011, it started to peak up and then shot up like a kite, you know, and went up from a little over $2 trillion to over $4 trillion now, literally almost in just the last 8-9 years, which is crazy. And they're going on to say now that millennials that have college degree with student debt now have an average of a negative $1,900 net worth. negative $1,900 net worth, meaning they're in the negative. They have no net worth. They're negative net worth. And they're saying now that this is almost becoming a debt epidemic because they're showing that the school systems and the colleges, especially a lot of these private schools, the tuition rate has gone up so much over the last 20 years, and so many of these kids have this ideology that they're going to go to school, they're going to rack up all this debt, they're going to get out of school, and they're going to make all this money when, you know, the average income pretty much with a four-year degree is around $40,000, $35,000, $40,000 a year. You're coming out of some of these private schools with $100,000, $120,000 in student debt just for a bachelor's degree, and they can't figure out how to get rid of it because you can't bankrupt this stuff, and it's becoming an insane issue. But it just kind of leads me back to what we've always kind of seen is there's two ways to essentially conquer a nation, and that's, you know, one of them is by, you know, fighting wars, aggressive conflict. The other one is essentially by debt. Those two things are pretty much the main concepts of conquering a nation. And when you can get a generation that they're so concerned about just life because they can't pay their bills, they can't get out of their student debts, they're fighting to try to get out of all this debt, they don't really put up much resistance anymore. And that generation will be much, much easier and much more submissive to a socialist government in the future because all they want to do is be out from underneath that burden. And then once they get out from underneath it, they don't want anybody else to ever have to be under that burden of student debt. So they're going to vote more aggressively to have free education, free health care, which when I say free, I mean that sarcastically, because as you guys know, nothing is free. Everything costs money at a certain point. But this is what their agenda is. And essentially, when you see this now, that the non-housing debt in the United States is over $4 trillion, which is insane, because that's well over what our GDP is in this country now per year. That shows you that we are on a grease track into a massive, massive recession at some point in time. Now, whether or not they can continue to prop it up with their quantitative easing and their $85 billion a month from the Federal Reserve, if they're still doing that, I don't know. But all we know is that it's best right now to make sure you keep your investments tight, try to stay out of debt the best you can, especially huge amounts of debt. And this housing market as well, be very careful. If you know what you're doing and you're moving stuff around, that's on you. But as far as what I see a lot of people doing again is trying to flip out of houses or taking equity out of houses to build more stuff or to do renovations, be very careful of that right now, because I don't see the housing market lasting like it is right now much more than 1 to 2 years. And if it goes past that, dude, it's going to be on toothpicks staying alive. So just be very, very cautious right now in this very volatile market. At least that's just my opinion, Dad.
Well, I have a friend of mine who's basically saying, oh, we can sell our house now for, you know, we paid $200,000 for it. Now we can sell it for $600,000. The problem is we can't buy anything as nice as ours for $600,000.
Yeah.
I mean, there is hyperinflated again. I mean, you have what's called the utility value of housing. In other words, what can a person afford to pay for rent? In other words, can you, if it gets to the point where you can't afford to pay rent, you know, if the house mortgage is $5,000, if it's $2,000 a month and in 6 years it's going to jump up because it's going to readjust and it's going to go from $2,000 a month to $6,000 a month, nobody can afford that. I mean, it's just that there's small percent of the population can make a $6,000 a month house payment. And so you're assuming, well, I'm going to pay $2,000 a month for it. It's going to readjust in 4 years, 5 years, and I'll get out of it and I'll sell it for more money and I'll be able to make more money and more money and more money. That works okay with a housing boom. Now, what happened is the Federal Reserve was raising interest rates because they were contracting the M1 money supply again last year, which was causing the stock market to crash, and they owned the stock market also, 90% of it. So they were selling their stocks and shorting them, making money on both ends, stealing more money from the American people. That's what they do. But the problem is Donald Trump started squawking about the Federal Reserve chairman saying, you know, blah, 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 you can't be doing this, can't be raising interest rates. And because he's doing what they want him to do, guys, listen to me. They stopped raising interest rates. That's the only reason they did that. They've allowed the interest rates to be too low for too long. And what it's done is hyperinflated the economy. That's why a loaf of bread, you could buy a good loaf of bread for $2 or $3. You know, now a good loaf of bread, like all grain bread, is like $5 or $6. And you're like, what the heck, man? I remember when I was a kid, you could buy whole wheat bread for like 29 cents a loaf. You get Wonder Bread for like, you know, 19 cents a loaf. And you think, well, that sounds silly, Ted. Well, no, the minimum wage back then was like $1.16 an hour. You think, well, now you're starting to sound like my grandparents. Well, I probably could be your grandparent. I'm old enough to be your grandparent. So it's just what's happened. It's not that bread's gotten any more expensive. It's that the dollar's worth less. I mean, think about that for a second. That's why a lot of the wealthy people, they don't put their money into cash or into bank accounts. They put it into paintings, you know, works of art. They put it in the old cars. They put it into real estate because they know they put it into precious metals. And precious metals is an easy way to get into it because right now gold should be, and I mentioned this before, should be well over $20,000 an ounce. Silver should be $500 an ounce, probably $1,000 an ounce. And it's not. But that's because they're continuing to give negative, they do what they call naked shorts on the gold market to keep it pushed down. And now some of the major silver manufacturers have gone out of business because they can't afford to make the product at below cost. This is what these groups of bankers do. And as long as they can bring in a demon to run the planet and get us under one world religion, they're all good for it. They're all about it. And that's why you always ask yourself a question. Who can you not criticize? Who do you have to be careful if you criticize? Who gets hammered if they criticize so-and-so? Think through that for a minute. By the way, while we're criticizing people, let's criticize Starbucks some more. I can't stand Starbucks. I really, really suggest that you evaluate going to Starbucks. Starbucks is now installing needle disposal boxes in locations across America following OSHA penalties and concerns about drug use in bathrooms. Now, you heard that right. Starbucks has installed needle disposal boxes in its location bathrooms in multiple U.S. markets as the chain works to address worker safety issues concerns in recent months. By summer of 2019, the coffee giant plans to install sharp boxes in bathrooms in all regions, and such action was deemed necessary where they have all these drug addicts going in and buying coffee. I guess the drugs aren't enough, Austin. They still have to buy coffee. Starbucks was fined $3,100 as a result of the investigation because they said that they needed to have these needle boxes. I mean, think through that. Starbucks' efforts to avoid and address opioid use and improperly disposing needles bathrooms are expanding. The coffee giant also allows district managers and store managers to put requests and have sharp box disposal boxes put in their bathrooms. Okay, let me stop here for a second. Okay, here's what I want to do. I want to go to Starbucks, and I want to go in the bathroom, and I want to make sure I don't sit on a needle or get poked by a needle or have somebody put some paper towels on the sink that has a needle in. I pick up the paper towels, throw them in the garbage, and whatever. Or they put some paper down on the toilet, and I got to move the paper on the toilet. It's got a needle in it. And the needle's infected with hepatitis or AIDS. There's been a lot of these guys that are doing this have hepatitis and AIDS or both. Starbucks, what's wrong with you? I know you said that if you're a Christian and you oppose, you know, gay marriage, that don't bother coming here. I got that. Okay, I've got that. I don't go to Starbucks. I've told my family, my children, my friends, everybody, and you guys, millions of listeners, I don't do Starbucks. I don't recommend Starbucks. But do you really want to go to Starbucks and dodge needles in the bathroom? What if the person has hepatitis and they're oozing pus and they're dying and they're coughing in the bathroom now and they're injecting themselves and they spill pus and blood everywhere in the bathrooms and now they get pus and blood all over their hands and they're touching the doorknobs? These people don't wash their hands. You know, and they're urinating all over the floor and you're walking in the urine. Yeah, that's the picture I'm painting right now. How many of you want to go to Starbucks for lunch? How about you? Let's see you raise your hands. Yeah, but bleh! Nobody wants to go to Starbucks after that. So now they're installing needle disposal boxes because they want to make sure people don't get stuck with the needles that are being left in the bathrooms. I don't even know what to say about this. It's just avoid that place as far as I'm concerned. Oh, by the way, China won't find the lost F-35 stealth fighter, which, by the way, is a piece of junk. Says the Pentagon. Apparently, it's F-35 decided just to crash over the Pacific Ocean on January the 11th. They're still trying to find it in 5,000 feet of water. However, the Japanese are trying to lead it. Now, China's also looking at it because they want to look at the doggone technology inside of the F-35. Let me explain something to you about these trillion-dollar boondoggles like the F-35 combined with the F-22. These planes don't fly right. They don't. Why do you think they're still flying F-16 and F-18s that are 30, 40 years old? These new planes, they try to make them. Okay, here's what they're doing. We have technology that far exceeds, you know, in combustion jet engines like this. We have stuff that's way beyond this. We have anti-gravity technology. We've had it for years. I mean, for decades. We have the ability to create airplanes that aren't going to pollute, airplanes that are unbelievable, you know, airplanes that basically are modeled after, how should I say this nicely, recovered alien spacecraft. That's about as nice as I didn't say or could say or whatever. We have that technology, but we don't want to release it to the public because we have a breakaway civilization that uses this stuff. So they're constantly going in and creating this stuff, which is advanced of what we have, but the technology far exceeds it. I mean, look at the space shuttle program. We have anti-gravity technology that can bring anything we want into orbit. We've got that already. But we've got a space shuttle, so finally Obama, the gay Kenyan, he finally decides that he's not going to keep that program alive anymore, so he basically puts it on mothballs. And now we're having the Russians help us to bring stuff to the space station, but we're supposed to be dire enemies with the Russians. Guys, does anybody believe this crap anymore? Does anybody believe any of this stuff anymore? I mean, the German-Austrian scientists discovered the anti-gravity technology back in the 20s and the 30s. I mean, we know what it is. We know how to use it. And it all deals with energy and harmonics and fluid harmonics and energy harmonics and physics. The technology of these planes, they're trying to retrofit them to current technology that's been basically buffered down, and it's simply not working. They need to go ahead and just really step up to the pump and give us some real planes so they know how to make now. By the way, multiple studies are now showing that alcohol is the real gateway to drug, not cannabis. I've known that for years. I have so many friends of mine who started drinking in high school, drinking in college, who are frat boys that basically are still drunk. Years ago, we were blessed to go to a Florida State FSU game for the national championship in Pasadena. I believe it was 2013. I think it was January of 2014 we went out there, 5 years ago now, 5.5 years ago. Austin was with me, and I had a bunch of friends there from college that were frat boys, and they're still drinking booze. And I remember one of the frat boys had, he was drunk as a skunk, and his son walks up, who's a Florida State person now, and he's drunk as a skunk, and goes from one generation to the next generation with alcoholism, or functional alcoholism, I should say. Now, am I saying having a beer every once in a while is a big deal? No, no, it's not. Glass of wine, no, it's not. But guys, gateway drug, alcohol is it. It really gets a lot of people started. People usually start smoking dope. They start smoking, they start drinking alcohol, start drinking wine, start drinking beer, start drinking whiskey, because they see their parents do it. You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, we should do prohibition again, because that's ridiculous. We're not going to legislate morality. But, you know, the reality is that alcohol is bad for you from a health standpoint, and many people who do alcohol then start on pot, which goes to the other drugs. But the initial gateway drug is the alcohol. Officer, what do you think, bud?
Well, yeah, and you have to understand that, I mean, the amount of money that's made and the taxes and everything with alcohol far exceeds anything that the government wants to try to control again. But they have found that the ability to suppress cannabis and CBD and everything else to the best of their ability can massively increase pharmaceutical sales. That's the difference. There is no pharmaceutical exchange for alcohol. Alcohol is just alcohol. It will always be alcohol. There's nothing, it's just, it's all the same. It's all alcohol. The body metabolizes it essentially all the same. But when you have a compound like cannabis or CBD that can have numerous medical properties, even if you're not using it for psychoactive properties, but the ability to actually have health benefits to it, Big Pharma doesn't want that. They don't want you to have the ability to help yourself or fix certain diseases. That's why they do so much propaganda in telling people, oh, you can't take this. That doesn't work. Natural side doesn't work. That's why they patented the doggone fish oil capsules 10 years ago. You guys remember that? They came out with a pharmaceutical fish oil. It's like $6 a pill for omega-3 fat. And you look at them, and it's not anything different than our normal cod liver oil. But they go, this FDA-approved pharmaceutical cod liver oil. And I scratch my head, look at them, I'm like, no, this is just molecularly distilled omega-3 fats. Oh, no, no, no. This is $700 a bottle of pharmaceutical cod liver oil. I'm like, no. I'll stick with my $25 bottle old-fashioned cod liver oil. That works just fine for me. But this is why they do it, because they want to make the hundreds of billions of dollars. And so they've already come out with numerous different THC and CBD pharmaceutical drugs. They've been working on it for years. That way they're never going to go in. And my personal opinion, I never believe they're going to federally legalize cannabis or CBD on a full-blown scale. They've already done that with hemp a little bit. I think that's about as far as we're going to get. Because not only does it allow them to suppress that market so they can make hundreds of billions of pharmaceutical sales, it also allows them to make billions of dollars in the prison industrial complex. And that's just a concept that a lot of people don't want to address with the entire war on drugs that we have seen as an abysmal failure over the last, what, 50, 60 years now. So that's just something else to also look at. Also, to the other news, as we've talked about so many times, another study has now been conducted by McMaster University out of Ontario, Canada, that investigated the potential influence of gut microbe on mental health. We've talked about this so many times, and these research studies are starting to pop up left and right now, that there is a significant connection between gut health and how the body reacts to anxious scenarios. They go on to say in their study, the researchers learned that the gut microbe is also involved in transmitting signals to the brain. These messages can exert effects on mood and behavior. The university's Brain Body Institute researchers ran an animal model of how gut health affected mood and demeanor. The simulation showed that they could regulate the mood of high anxiety mice by giving them good gut bacteria from the droppings of other healthy animals. And what's crazy about this is the researchers in the next part of the experiment took probiotics from calm mice and fed the good bacteria to the stress mice. That's how they did it. And the high anxiety mice demonstrated improvements in their behavior over the next couple of weeks. Based on the findings, the researchers identified the brain biomarkers connected to stress in mice. They detected the presence and levels of human equivalents to these biomarkers and could determine whether or not a person is at risk of developing a mental disorder or is already afflicted with such. If a mental disorder can be identified in the early stages, the patients can be treated with appropriate probiotics. The disorder could also be alleviated or even prevented in its entirety. This is great information because, as we've talked so many times, you know, the omega-3 fats, the B vitamins, they're incredibly important for brain health. They're incredibly important for synaptic function. But also, too, we're finding more and more that probiotics need to be added into that protocol. That's why we carry three different probiotics, and essentially they go up on a scale from the strongest, you know, to the most basic, which even our most basic probiotic is still incredibly effective. We have the probiotic DF, which is dairy-free probiotic, a couple hundred billion. We have our probiotic 100 billion, which is 100 billion CFUs per capsule. And then we have our probiotic 350 billion, which actually is packaged at 650 billion at time of manufacturing. We just guarantee it after a two-year date that it still maintains a minimum of 350 billion CFU, which just stands for colony forming units. And in my opinion, I've looked with that, and I look, that's why we tried to get this together. This product's incredibly expensive to make. We have very little margin on it. I've had people go, man, it's almost $100 a can. It's $100 a can, and it comes out at 650 billion CFUs per serving. There's nothing on the market that I've ever seen like this, but we have seen so many times, time and time again, when we get people on proper amounts of omega-3 and B vitamins and then throw in the probiotics, almost every time that I've personally seen, anxiety issues, depression issues, issues of those nature are usually significantly reduced when you add the probiotics in to the other supplement stack. So again, another research study that proves that gut health is tied to brain health, Deb.
You know, Austin, it's called threshold levels. You have to have a high enough level to reach a threshold of repair for the body. In other words, if you're let me put it this way. If your body's using, you know, 10 milligrams of any nutrient per day, and you're putting in 8 milligrams of that nutrient into your body in supplement form, okay, you never reach a threshold level because you're using more than you're putting in. That's why you have to have a high enough dosing. This happens all the time with supplements. You see people, I don't want to take more than one pill. And you're like, one pill's not going to do it because it's not going to reach your threshold level. You're just basically using a little bit every day and you're not putting that little bit back in. So it's like burning a candle at both ends. It'll burn and it'll burn a little bit longer because you keep adding a little bit of wax to the stick, but it's still going to burn out. And see, this is what nutrient dosing does. That's why people say, well, why do I have to take 4 B complex a day? Because your body's really deficient in B vitamins. And your mitochondria have to have B vitamins. B vitamins are basically the spark plugs of the Krebs cycle, of the ATP adenosine triphosphate cycle that creates cell for the energy for the cell and energy for your body. And if you're deficient in B vitamins and you're woolly and it's woolly deficient, you have very unhealthy mitochondria, you got to build those little puppies back up again so they start working. And so you can't just do it and say, oh, I'm just going to take a multiple. I don't feel 100% better. Now, a lot of times, a person is so deficient, they just take the powdered multiple and go, wow, I feel great, because they don't realize how much greater they can feel if they add a few more things like the B vitamins, the vitamin C, the D3, and the K2. And we also tell people, look, omega-3 fats are really important for proper brain health. You know, 5-HTP, you know, really, really good for proper brain health. B-complex, really good for proper brain health. But some people just don't want to believe that. I've got a friend of mine right now, and he's a great friend. I mean, he's like a brother to me, actually. He's like family to me. I met him 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I can't remember. I think it's 15 years ago now. He was suicidally depressed. One of his sons had died on a motorcycle accident, and his body was completely and totally depleted, and he was having all kinds of psychiatric issues on psychiatric drugs and a psychiatric support group, wanting to commit suicide. And I told him, I said, Mike, I said, you know, you're going to have to work with your medical doctor if you're going to start taking supplements and start looking at all this dosing that you're doing with these drugs, which he did, but he refused year after year after year to reach threshold levels on supplements. You tell him to take four of one thing, he'd take one every other day. And, you know, and you think, come on, bud, really? But that's what he did. And so now here he is, he's in his 60s now, and his health has gone to crap. He says, well, I don't know what to do. And I'm like, well, Mike, I said, I slipped, sorry. It could be Joe, it could be John, it could be David, it could be Sam. Not going to be Mike, not today. And I said, look, I said, here's the thing. I said, you've got to do something, you know, with what you're so non-compliant with what you do. You know, he's got all these health issues. And I'm like, and I'm older than him. And I have like no health issues. And he goes, well, I'm doing it. It took forever. I mean, he gets a distiller from us because he's not supposed to drink fluorine and chlorine, right? He sits on the shelf for a year, and he's a good friend. He brings it back. He goes, I haven't used it, so I want to get a refund. And I'm like, dude, you're still drinking tap water. You're drinking tap water. Really? I said, it's going to cause all kinds of bladder issues, prostate issues, all this stuff. You can't do this. Now it's got prostate issues. And you think, what does it take to make you listen? I don't know, guys. I don't know. I guess that's why the Bible says, let he who has ears to hear, let him hear. Look at Tylenol. Another study just came out. It says Tylenol's empathy-killing properties confirmed in a second study. I mean, it kills your empathy. Two highly concerning clinical studies in 4 years reveal that not only is Tylenol one of the primary causes of liver failure, but also kills pain, and not only pain, but human empathy as well, adding to its soul-deadening properties to its well-known list of serious side effects. I mean, Tylenol shouldn't even be on the market. Here the FDA wants to pull vitamins off the market. They always want to pull vitamins off the market. But they let Tylenol stay on the market with its soul-deadening process and its liver failure. Look on a bottle of NyQuil. They warn you basically not to mix Tylenol with alcohol. NyQuil mixes Tylenol with alcohol, as do most over-the-counter liquid cold medicines. You're thinking, what the heck? It's warning you that if you take more than you're supposed to take, you have liver failure. Yeah, Tylenol and alcohol are two of the primary products that are used for liver failure in the United States. I mean, thousands of people are admitted every year into the hospitals. Many of them die from liver failure because of these drugs. People use them to commit suicide with. I mean, it's insanity. And they're on the market. And you think, what the heck? Yeah. It's what happens when people don't realize that these guys don't care about you. They only care about their profits. They only care about how much money they're going to make. Look, another study just came out. Topical black seed oil. I take black seed oil on a regular basis. It says it beats Tylenol for pain relief and osteoarthritis. This is like if you have osteoarthritis in your joints and you rub topical black seed oil, which we have. We have it. You take the liquid and pour right on your hands and rub it in. And it says, you know, basically, it does everything. It says recently the over-the-counter painkilling drugs like ibuprofen and Tylenol have been found to have a battery of serious adverse side effects, some even life-threatening. Even aspirin, commonly believed to be a life-saving cardioprotective agent, has come under scrutiny as perhaps doing far more damage than good. Even more astounding is recent discovery that some of these drugs have soul-numbing properties, not unlike psychotropic medications. Now, they're finding out that basically you can use black seed oil as a topical and you have huge relief in pain. I mean, this is an amazing thing. The study shows that topical black seed oil it reduced pain in elderly people with knees like osteoarthritis. Wow. Wow, wow. Think about it for a second. This oil can be effective in reducing knee pain in elderly patients better than acetaminophen. So, guys, think about that for a second with what it does, what black seed oil does. Once I said, in fact, I was quoting Sajer G. He said it was the cure for everything but death, which I don't believe that, but I thought it was funny. But black seed oil is one of those products that everybody needs to be taking every single day. It's very, very, very important. One final thing here from Breitbart. Battleground, Florida. Soros-funded groups work to register 1.4 million ex-felons ahead of 2020 in Florida alone. Think about that, as Florida being now one of the largest swing states in the United States. Register 1.4 million felons. And again, Rothschild owns Soros. Think about that for a second. Rothschild loaned Trump the money to stay out of bankruptcy. Rothschild, international banking cartels run the world. Guys, I got to pray for you this morning. I love you guys. I had the privilege of praying for you. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for getting your vitamins from us and your vitamin C and your black seed oil and your toothpaste and all the other things that you could have bought somewhere else you buy from us. It means the world to me that you do that. I love you and I appreciate you. Austin, I'll do the write-up and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Absolutely. Also, too, in other news, I guess the military budget is so far over bloated now, they have to try to figure out new ways to reinvent the wheel. They said earlier this month now, Textron Systems will be delivering its next-generation squad automatic weapon technology. They will now be redesigning and redeploying the M4, essentially, and the SAW, the M249, will be completely redesigned and rechambered to shoot the 8 millimeter ammunition. I don't know if you guys have shot that before. I've shot some of the past. It's a good round. Got a lot of knockdown power. It's a very nice mix between a 5.56 and a 308. The issue with it is the cost is everything has to change. You know, I mean, the entire platform of the weapon has to change, the barrel, the bolt, everything. And the ammunition is very cost prohibitive, in my opinion, from what I've seen for it. But again, this is what the military does when they have nothing else to do. They said it'll be more effective at 600 meters. Which is ironic because majority of firefight engagements, if you talk to anybody over there, are not usually much more than 100 meters. And if they are, you're usually going to more long-range weapon systems like the 308 platform or the 50 caliber. So I guess the Pentagon wants to go ahead and waste more money on stuff that they don't need right now. They said over the next 15 months they're going to demonstrate the maturity of this weapon, and essentially they're going to be contracting, awarding 250,000 units and 150 million rounds of this ammunition. So I guess it's just time to put the old 5.56 M4 up and field a new platform. The issue that a lot of people don't understand with this, though, is especially when you do full deployments on this, is matching the capability to be able to have the compatibility of weapon changes. So you can't just go in and add a new service rifle in. You have to add all the service rifles in at this point, because now if you have a 5.56 and you have a 6.8 and you have a 308, you have all these different rounds. It makes it very, very difficult on an infantry platform to integrate. That's why they've always kept it in the two basic, the 5.56 and the 7.62-51. But again, I just find it interesting that the Pentagon has nothing else to do with spend its money besides come out with new weapons with ammo that essentially is not going to be fielded in any other platforms now. Just goes to show you why we do not need to spend $900 billion a year on our military and try to go in and actually conserve some type of funding. But again, that doesn't seem like anything's getting done like that lately. Thank you so much for the support, guys. We appreciate everything. Be sure to check out the website at healthmasters.com if you need anything at all. The CBD oil on sale one more day as product of the week, 10% off. Be sure to check it out. Thank you, guys. We appreciate you. You have a blessed, safe, awesome night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.